From lengthening mascara to smoky eyes, complete your fall look with Thrive Cosmetics. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/cozy for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive, CAUSEMETICS.com/cozy.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of ABA Mom. I'm your host, Allie, a mom of five and board certified behavior analyst. And today we have a special guest, Andrew Borstner, who works for KTABA in Brevard County and also goes out in the community and digs dinosaur bones. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me. It was fun to be invited.
Yeah. Can you share your journey and what led you to become a BCBA and eventually the owner of KTABA?
For sure. So it all started when I was 12 years old. I was a confederate for somebody in ABA, and my first exposure was somebody that was nonverbal, preemie, cerebral palsy, ASD3. And this child, or at that time my peer, was just such a great individual. And that kind of opened it up to me on awareness about autism. Now, from ages 12 to 16, I volunteered at Brevard Zoo. And I worked at the Brevard Zoo when I was 16 for about 10 years. In that 10 years, I developed a DevRO program that came in for the last hour of the pause-on area that was open to help clean up and work on social skills. And then I also worked with FIT too, with their social group, in developing social skills within the zoo as like an outing that their facility could utilize as well. I joined up officially in ABA professionally when I was 25, and I was an RBT from August 2016 to about May 2021, and then I became the BCABA because I felt it was important to do that in-between step in order to really get a handle on what it is like to be a BCBA. That way I can still get the supervision. I'm just not thrown in the deep end. In November of 2021, I became BCBA. And after realizing that the companies I've worked for, that not all of them had that same passion and drive that I had for getting outdoors and what I like to call touching grass, you know, just getting out in nature and experiencing it, I decided to make my own company, and then the rest is history.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And I've met a lot of BCBAs that were BCABAs before. I have a student analyst that's kind of her route. Like, she's going to be a BCABA and then she plans to eventually become a BCBA. So I think that stepping stone is great too, that you were able to do that as well.
It really helped out.
Yeah, I think it's great. And you still get the support and supervision while you're working as an analyst, and then you become an analyst. So I think that's a great idea too. Your website highlights community involvement. What inspired you to build a practice that values outings? Like, I know you kind of told me a little bit, like you worked at the zoo, which is really interesting, but why is it? Yeah, so that natural environment is a part of ABA. That's very interesting.
So it actually originated at the zoo. While I was working there, you know, over many years, I came into a bunch of roles, but mostly I was in the education department. And for 8 of those years, I oversaw the first and second grade camps at Brevard Zoo. And I also did community outreach programs with the zoo. And the community outreaches were zoo school nights. They were going out to schools and doing presentations. The Indian River Lagoon 4th grade program, when they go out there and learn about the lagoon. And after seeing all this different stuff just influence the kids, I was like, there's something there. There's something there about just bringing something new into a child's life that they normally don't experience, and especially when they get out there, like in the lagoon program. And when that happened, I kept it in the back of my mind, and that's kind of what I did all my therapy, even as an RBT with. And then I realized that if you couple that with ABA, you get a really effective result.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, the importance of community outings, because we're always talking about, you know, generalizing too. So if we want to generalize skills, those communities and those places where our clients are, I think that's really important. So what are some ways that you feel these experiences support your clients with in ways that a clinic can't?
Well, being out in the community, in my opinion, is the best application of ABA, because what it does is it really highlights the dimensions of behavior, which is what we should all be incorporating anyways into our practices. So, like, the applied dimensions there, where it targets behaviors that are important to the individual and hold social significance. Well, getting out to a playground is pretty important to a child, and it's socially significant because there's where all the kids are. This is where we work on socialization with peers, language, self-care skills. You know, the affective dimension there, you know, it produces meaning and significant behavior change, right? So now we can see how effective it is by how they interact with those peers. And of course, generality, it's where they're going to be anyways. We don't really have to program for it because we're doing it where it needs to be anyways. So right there, I'm already accounting for 3 out of 7 of those dimensions by just going somewhere different.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's great. What are some typical community-based sessions? What does that look like for you and your team?
So the typical outing is normally comprised of the RBT, the Registered Behavior Technician, the child, and the parent. Normally, we're visiting like local parks and beaches on the east coast of Florida, and they last about 30 minutes to 2 hours. And then in the community setting, you know, we're taking data, we're implementing the behavior plan, that's specifically designed for them on their challenges and whatnot. What we do with the community outings there when we go out is we modify those protocols to best fit that setting so that the child can get the support that they need in order to achieve that higher quality of life, which is making friends, being able to play games without struggling. And by doing it in that location, they're being taught where they need it. So now, it's not being taught in a sterile environment like a clinic or a school. It's taught in the real life. So now they don't have to double learn what to do.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. That's great. So I do want to talk about the dinosaur bones because I just want to say, Andrew and I, we met at the FABA conference and he came over to their table and just brought these dinosaur teeth and bones and like, it was so cool and so different from anything I've ever heard before. And So you travel to Wyoming to dig up these dinosaur bones. How did that passion start?
So when I worked at the zoo, the director of education, Chris DeLore, was massively into dinosaurs. He's been digging dinosaurs like decades before he's even met me. And as a child, I used to be really into them. And then you get out of it and whatnot. But he brought me back in. Because he would have, like, the new thing he found or bought on his desk, and he would show it to me. And then you fast forward 10 years, and then I got to go on my first dino dig, which was just awesome. And then, since then, I've been going pretty much every year on a dinosaur dig there just because of that experience of getting out, finding fossils, and sometimes you don't find any, but you're out in nature. You know, that's all part of the experience as well. So, when I left this the zoo, I stayed in touch with Chris and visited the dino lab. That's where he prepares dino fossils. And I frequently volunteered and putting dinosaur bones together, working with modern skulls and just catching up with them. And then I asked him because I realized when I was in RBT and I had to make an LLC for being BCBA, since private contractors normally get paid through their LLC, you know, what's going to set me apart? And I thought about it a little bit, and you know, kids like one of three things, you know, trains, pizza, dinosaurs. I work mostly in the autism community, and I'm like, those are the top three right there. And I'm like, well, I don't have access to a train yard, I don't have access to a pizzeria, but what I do have access to is Chris, someone that deals in fossil materials. So I approached him with that and asked him to partner up with me if he would provide the experts to facilitate learning and give that better experience to the family if I provided the behavioral services. And he agreed to go into partnership with me with Educational Biofacts. And now we're able to put awesome experiences on for the family.
I think that is so awesome. Like, I know when I was a kid, I was like in love with dinosaurs. I even had like a dinosaur book I carried, and I used to try to like dig in my backyard for different dinosaur bones. So
yeah.
If I was at your ABA clinic, I would be ecstatic.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like a blast. So when you bring the fossils or bones back, I mean, what are the kind of reactions that you see from your clients?
Well, most of the reactions are surprised. And one way that they're surprised is, Mr. Andy, actually found dinosaur bones. That is the first and foremost. They can't believe that I actually found a dinosaur bone. And two, that they actually have a dinosaur bone. That's the second part that hits home. But there's still some individuals that are unsure about it, though, and this could possibly be not being able to relate the piece of dinosaur bone to the animal. So when I go out and collect, I put them in little boxes like this. They get a piece of dinosaur bone. I print out a label here, you know, explaining what it is and whatnot. But from this piece of fossil, you can't tell what animal, where it came from, but it's a real piece of dinosaur bone. And sometimes, you know, with all of this, they encounter rigid thinking. So I get a very neutral or sometimes even a negative thought, because the only place they normally see dinosaurs are in museums, right? And what do parents tell their kids? Look with your eyes, not with your hands. So now the average child does not know someone that owns a museum. They know in the museums they're not allowed to touch, they're only allowed to look. Though more museums are going to, you know, that hands-on learning, which is awesome.
Right.
And they see the dinosaurs in there, so in their head sometimes they think, oh, dinosaurs are only in museums and I'm not allowed to touch them. But when they have a piece of dinosaur bone in their hand, that's a false statement. And that's because everything they're experiencing doesn't line with that rule. And honestly, that's my favorite response to see, because now this child, you know, cracks open that rigid thinking due to evidence-based experience. You know, here it is in my hand. And it opens them up a little bit more. It kind of takes that defense shield down a little bit. And the funny part is, I have some parents tell me, oh, no, you're not allowed to own dinosaur bones. It's illegal. So here's full adults thinking that it's illegal to own dinosaur bones. That only museums can do it, let alone a child. So it kind of helps everybody else crack that rigid thinking. But most of the times they're happy and ecstatic about it. And we talk about it, too, during session and look up pictures and everything else like that.
I think that's a great way, what you were saying too, just teaching that flexibility and kind of, you know, in one environment, like we can't touch the dinosaur bones, but in this environment we can. So just teaching that skill and, you know, stimulus discrimination, like being able to discriminate and like which environment, right. Like, can I touch the dinosaur bones? And in this one, I can't touch the dinosaur bones. So I really like that idea and a way to apply it at your clinic. And then you can also like use it as like a lesson, like you said, like, let's go ahead and like look up the dinosaurs and the artifacts. So right. I think that's really a neat way to do it. And having that, and the parents too, that are like, you can't have this.
Right. That's and the maybe funniest that's response ever.
Yeah.
You know, full adults not knowing that you can legally own dinosaur bones. I'm like, you can't, not only can you own it, you can just go out and find them.
Yeah.
Like, you can just pick them up. Like, they're still out there. Because some people think, oh, no, we found them all. No, we didn't.
That's pretty amazing. I think that's incredible. So how do you believe that the exposure to nature, whether, you know, it's the hiking, the digging, exploring, helps children with autism and like developmental delays? How do you think that might help them? What's your observation?
Now, this is really interesting and the bread and butter to KTABA. Like, yeah, dinosaurs are really cool. I'm not discounting that. Dinosaurs are amazing. But it's what happens in nature that really drives home our effective therapy. And what it does is when you go out in nature in any capacity, and you go out into a green space. Now, it doesn't have to visibly be green. It's just something with lessened artificial stimulus, like car noises, heavy pollution smells, indoor lighting. All that's artificial stimulus, right? So when you're increasing natural stimulus, the sun, grass, dirt, wind, nature sounds, etc., it seems to have a calming effect on all the individuals. And there's a reason why people go camping, right? There's a reason why they go for a walk outside or they go to a state park just to get away from it all. It kind of resets that stress anxiety index inside. And even though we're working with children, they have disabilities. They're still people too. And they have this same response in nature. Now, looking at some studies overseas where NBI, nature-based intervention, is embraced, they showed a 92.2% of participants demonstrating a consistent improvement across multiple health outcomes. This isn't just behavioral, it's mentalistic too, like anxiety, stress, etc. And this happens when they engaged in the outdoors. Now, 78% facilitated engagement, so they actively tried to do something outdoors, you know, in the absence of air pollution, noise, and all that, the engagement was actually up from any other setting. There was a reduction in ASD mannerisms, increase in social awareness. There was redirection naturally from hyperactivities, so the ADD, ADHD components there. There was a reduction in irritability. They were more relaxed and able to receive feedback from this. And what these studies show is that in the absence of these artificial stimuluses, we see the child for who they are and their true capabilities, which facilitates the ability to learn at an elevated rate. And these are the individuals that I hire at KTABA that has that same passion to be outdoors, that's not afraid to get into the community setting. You know, you have a parent and yourself. You have a 40-hour training plus supervision, and the parents are the parents. They've been with that child the whole life. What are you afraid of? Get out to a park. Get somewhere that's a green space and enjoy it.
Yeah. No, I really like this idea. And I think it's, you know, that saying of, you know, let's go for a walk or get some fresh air, right?
Yeah.
Because it's, you're changing settings, right? You're changing locations. And and I think that this is an area too where applied behavior analysis, we don't have a ton of research on the effects of like outside stimulus and what it does to individuals with ASD. However, a lot of other interdisciplinaries, like they do. So there's like, you know, mental health, like, you know, there's a lot of studies like going outside. So I think even if we're not taking it from the behavior perspective, like it's still like, we know like mental health, like they say, it's good to go outside. It's good to be in nature. Like this is healthy for our bodies. And I know a lot of people that, you know, they just go outside, they go for, you know, a hike, they go for camping, all of those things. Yeah. And I think what I see a lot of with kids with ASD is that there is a lot of inside time, and then parents become a little isolated because they're afraid to take their kids outside,
well, yeah,
right? Because
that's
a tantrum.
Like, exactly. You're not going to get weird looks in your house. You don't got to worry about them, you know, wandering off or anything like that. So I get it.
Yeah. And I think it's great because if it's the RBT and the parent, you're right. The parent has been there. This is their child. Like they know their child, but then they have the extra support. So then they have the RBT that's there alongside them. So they're not alone in this too, which is great.
So with that there, it gives that parent a little bit more confidence because if something were to go sideways in the shoot, you have a trained professional there. Like you have somebody that's trained to deal with these behaviors. So now that's off your plate. So what you can do is just focus with making memories with your child.
Right.
And how great is that?
Yeah, that's awesome. What advice would you give parents who want to incorporate more nature and community activities into their child's daily routines?
So first I would say find your child's passion. No matter what you do in life, you need to start there. You need to know what your child is very passionate about. You got to know what their likes, their dislikes are. And then when you know that, you need to facilitate new opportunities because the child themselves don't have the ability to web, you know, they can't make associations where things may be related to each other. Research your local parks, you know, check them out. Take notes on what your child does and does not engage with in the outdoors. And just find your little slice of nature for your family where it's a green space with lowered, you know, artificial stimulus.
Yeah. No, I think that that's great. That's great. Can you kind of just explain, because I know you've mentioned green space before, but what would a green space look like?
So green spaces, like I said, it's not literally the color green. It doesn't have to be a soccer field. That would be a very green space. Though it could, because it's a big open area. Right? Normally, there isn't a lot of noise pollution coming through. There isn't a bunch of smell pollution. County parks, they're normally pretty good. They keep that natural. But, you know, the beach, there's nothing green at the beach. But here's the, and people might say, oh, the parking lot's right there. It's right next to a road and all this other stuff. Yeah, but think of where you are. The sand is stimulating their feet. There's normally a strong breeze that's making noise. There's normally wave sounds that's happening through everything. And though there might be other people talking, laughing, carry on, having a good time, the natural stimulus is turned up so high that it negates that. That the child now can just filter out that artificial stimulus. You know, the person with the speaker, or the people that are carrying on too loud. And they focus on that wind. They focus on that water noise, the waves coming up the beach. They feel that sensory input with their feet. You know, they can touch it. They can feel it move through their fingers. And that outcompetes everything that's going around. So a green space is just a place where nature will supersede all the other noises in just day-to-day hustle and bustles.
Right. Yeah. No, I love that too. And I think that is definitely, like, some people just say that's where people vacation. First of all, they come to the beach. We live where people vacation in Florida. So,
exactly.
But people come to the beach for a vacation, way to get away from all of that sound and noise. So, like, what a great opportunity that you can bring them to a place where people just relax. Like, that's a great place to kind of let go and relax. So I love that. And I love that you're saying, like, you know, the sensory is very different and you're kind of getting away from all these like crowded, like loud noises, right? Because what's the loudest? Really the wind. So I think it's a great thing that you're doing, and what a great opportunity that we have that in Florida.
Right.
But I love that. I love going on beach with my clients to the beach. It's every time I've gone to the beach with a client, it's always been a really great experience, like with their family. Like there's all kinds of
You're already seeing the benefit of MBA.
Yes. Very
it's
much
right
so.
There.
So yeah, it's right there. It's awesome. So on the other hand, the insurance, what are some of the biggest challenges that you face in balancing insurance requirements with naturalistic community-based outings?
Right. So if you're BCBA, you know that sometimes getting things approved isn't the easiest. So the biggest challenge, honestly, is for the insurance companies to approve the locations. Insurance companies sometimes don't see the value in something like the beach. In Florida, like you said, we're very fortunate to live close to the beach, and beaches are a perfect example of a lot of natural stimulus. Like I said, the breeze, the wave noises, the sand, the water, etc., that drowns out the car noises, the smells, and everything else like that. But insurance is like TRICARE, because this is my biggest offender. Don't see the benefits regardless of the data. And I've been told stuff like, you can't guarantee there'll be kids at the beach for social skills. And that location isn't behaviorally analytic in nature. In which response with, if you can show me a beach in Florida without kids, that's a miracle. Because every adult will be going to that beach, and then, you guessed it, they would bring their families because it's so nice and quiet, and boom, there's kids on the beach.
Yeah.
Second, the behavior plan is written for generalization, right? That's the requirement that we have to do, yeah. And this is a location that the family visits often, and where problem behaviors occur. You know, elopement, major thing at the beach, right? Wide open space, they're going to go explore.
Right.
And then we follow that behavior plan at the beach. So it's just like the home or school with the rules. They still apply in the community setting. Just because you're outside doesn't mean the rules change.
Right.
And that's the major barrier to this therapy style. You know, luckily most insurances are okay with it as long as there's a true medical need for it, which is pretty easy to prove in a behavior plan because you would prove it like any other setting.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I know that, you know, some insurance, like you mentioned, TRICARE, there's just sometimes it's just a little bit more stricter, and just kind of knowing what we do as behavior analysts, because, you know, even when I'm first like doing an assessment and I'm meeting like the family, sometimes like the assumption is like, okay, I can have ABA like a couple hours a week, right? They don't have like a understanding that this is, it's usually more hours, more exposure to hopefully other environments.
Right.
And different, you know, situations. Like we want to be in the situation where the behavior can occur, so we can help work through the behavior. So, and I think, you know, sometimes insurance is that understanding of like what it is that we're actually doing, because it's like you just want to go have a good time at the beach.
Right. It's like, that's a complete perception. You're just gonna be there tanning and drinking.
Yeah.
No,
That's
we're going to
pretty
be
cool.
working through tantrums with sharing the frisbee. Like, it's not as great as you think it is, insurance, I promise you. But again, it's better than being in four walls.
And the same thing with theme parks. There's so many opportunities in theme parks. Like there's, and you
Oh,
know,
yeah.
parents that like to go to the theme parks, first of all, there's lots of stimuli, right? Like there's lots of noises, sounds,
Right.
there's lots of people, like there's all kinds of things going on, you know, and it's a lot of, you know, accepting different alternatives, waiting in line, turn to, like there's a lot that goes into theme parks. And I'm
There's an entire behavior plans with their stuff
like,
because my staff goes into Disney, Epcot, Disney, sorry, Universal, SeaWorld, all the major theme parks in Orlando. Like, my staff go and log time there because I put it in the behavior plan. And they're always like, well, that's not behavior analytic in nature. I go, how much waiting in line do you think is at a theme park? How many times do you have to man to eat, go to the bathroom? How many times are you not allowed to elope into a crowd of people? Like, come on now. You gotta be kidding me. It's super behavior analytic. You have to work so hard in a theme park.
No, it's definitely is too. And I had one family that wanted me to help prepare their child for going into an airport. So we practice. I didn't actually get to go to the airport with them. They have a 6 a.m. flight, but we practice like, okay, like waiting in line, like this is what it looks like, and we're gonna have to stand here, you know. So there's a lot of skills that go in that. I'm like, there's so many places that, you know, behavior occurs everywhere.
Yeah, and it doesn't stop. It
Yeah,
always goes
absolutely.
on. But yeah, like you said, there's so many little behaviors that go into a seemingly easy large task, like, oh, yes, go to the airport, get on an airplane, and sit. Okay, there's about 900 steps between A and B. Let's talk about getting out of the car at the curb and not running into the street and standing with luggage. Let's just start there real quick.
That could you could break that down probably into 19 steps.
Oh yeah. But yeah, it gets a little deep, especially at airports, theme parks, anywhere there's a lot of like artificial stimulus. Because obviously, theme parks would not be considered a green space. It is all concrete,
It's
there are
not a
so
green space.
many noise piped in. No, it's the opposite of green space.
You might need a green space after that. Like I know after I go to theme
Exactly.
park, I usually like to find a green space.
Exactly. Let's all go to the beach real quick.
Yeah, let's go. Let's take a break. So, what's next for KTAA? Where do you see yourself expanding services, or maybe blending your passions with more paleontology, or like in different ways? Where do you see yourself?
So we'd like to expand, but again, we don't want to expand too quickly. We are always hiring passionate people. We're accepting new clients continuously. Right now, we're small and local, and we utilize local opportunities to do what we do. We have little plaster dig kits that kids can dig out for reinforcement and find little Florida fossils in. We have interactions with paleontologists where they can come out and just share their knowledge with them. But eventually, the pipeline dream is to get these kids, it's funny you brought up airports, out to the Midwest to dig in a dinosaur quarry, right? To go in there, pull out their own dinosaur bones, see what a dinosaur skeleton looks like in the ground, and really get that true green space because this is on ranchers' land, right? Where I go and dig dinosaur bones, it's 120,000 acres. Okay, there is nothing besides the farmer's house on this property, and it is the best reset that you can ever ask for with that. And these children, they have not the same advantages as a typically developing individual is. And what I would really like to do is give them an experience that the typical individual would not get to get. That way, they have something to share. There's now something peer-to-peer that they can relate to.
No, I think that's great. And I like how you're, you know, I think expansion is good. And then just kind of slow growth. Like, I think that's really good too, because it's important. I know a lot of agencies that grow really fast. And then it kind of loses some of its core values. So I love that you're keeping those values aligned and just kind of that slow expansion too.
Right, that ensures that everybody gets that individualized treatment.
Yeah, that's so important. If you could design the ideal ABA system in the US, what role would nature, community, and non-traditional settings play?
Well, I don't know if I can like envision the perfect ABA system, you know,
Yeah,
since
that's
every
very
child
true.
and environment would need its own special attention to barriers that are unique in that moment. But if I
Right.
had to say, if I had to design a realistic improvement to incorporate the NBI, the nature-based intervention research, to the insurances for them to approve natural settings, the beach, state parks, you know, just green spaces, so that, you know, we can start expanding the field past the walls of a clinic and
Right.
a school, you know, even ABA companies that are not producing quality, which blows my mind, honestly, when that happens. If you are able to get that same individual that may not be adequately trained or whatnot into a green space, the child still receives ample treatment results as a result for that. Because, you know, everybody would like to clone that one RBT that is just a BCBA in sheep's clothing, right? But NBI kind of levels that playing field so that the parents get what they want, which are results. You know, their children improving, their quality of life going up, all this other stuff. And the practitioner is getting in contact with success. And sometimes, you know, a green space helps with that, especially if you hit a plateau. Put them outside, do a couple of booster sessions outside, and then bring it back to where you need to go and see the difference.
No, that's great. Where can listeners find you? How can they contact you?
So we have a Facebook page, and funny story behind that. I try to make the Facebook page KT hyphen ABA, just like the logo on my shirt. And Facebook says, it has to be a real company. I'm like, it is. Go on the SunBiz report. I'm already there, man. Like, it's
Oh,
real.
that's funny.
So then I had to make it KT hyphen Behavioral Services. And they're like, all right, that sounds like a real company. I'm like,
Thanks, Ethan.
okay. Right, exactly. So on Facebook, that's our Facebook page there. We post photos up there, any little updates, you know, when we're accepting new clients, looking for new clients, because our wait list is down to zero. We post our flyer on there. And we also have a website, kt-aba.com, which is a little more deeper dive. You can see all the staff with a little bit of a bio on there, our motto, you know, kind of what we do, how to contact us.
Yeah, I
So.
looked at your page. I thought it was neat how all of your staff, they were all like holding it looked like it was each a dinosaur bone, right? Like it was pretty
Yeah,
cool.
so
Yeah.
with the RBTs, they all hold that jaw there.
Oh,
So it's
that's
kind
so
of like
awesome.
uniformed, and it's a replica, so it's 1 to 1 on how big it really is. But how boring is the same staff photo in front of like the same like foliage or whatever? Like, you can't tell what company they're with unless you look
Right.
at the shirt or whatnot. Luckily, my t-shirts have a massive logo right in the middle of it, as you saw at Faba. And you know, that dinosaur jaw kind of drives home, like, yeah, we really deal with this stuff. This isn't just like something we pretend to do. We actually incorporate it into it.
No, I think that's awesome. It's so cool. Your child like gets like so excited when I hear you talk about this. I'm like, oh,
And
yeah, that's
that's what I
awesome.
love is that effect. We try and go fossil hunting in Venice Beach
Okay.
once a year, where all the clients and RBTs that can go, we carpool over to Venice Beach, right? And we go shark tooth combing over there. And here's the beautiful part. We have a paleontologist with every family. We have an RBT that's actively billing medical insurance because it's an improved location that I had in the treatment plan. And the kids are in the water, sifting through all the sand and everything, finding real shark's teeth that they get to keep. And
That's
then you have
awesome.
the paleontologist there, be like, oh, yeah, that's a sand shark. Yeah, that's a great white tooth. So they're getting context on what they're finding. And meanwhile, go out 1 degree, the family that's there, they've never done anything like this. And they're all taking it in. They're making this core memory with their child that they've never been able to do before. And I just feel like I'm actually doing something because I'm facilitating this memory to stay with the family forever. because I care enough to bring them out into this environment, and I had the resources like the paleontologist and staff that are into it. Because at the end of that trip, I just hired on like 4 new staff, and that was their first outing. I'm like, all right, guys, you know, it's up to you, because I normally do 10 to 2. That way everybody has like the rest of their afternoon to go, and we're not rushing out. I'm like, all right, guys, up to you. We can, you know, head home or we can hang out a little more. And every single staff said, we want to find more shark's teeth. I'm like, have at it, guys.
That's awesome.
Go dig for some shark's teeth.
Talk about loving your job, like how exciting that is.
So
like, yeah, you're pairing that for like with a love of ABA. So like, all like, no wonder you have staff that are going to become BCBAs, because they're like, now they're pairing like the love of nature and the love of like finding like shark teeth with ABA. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's it's like I said, the best way to utilize the applied dimension in ABA. You know, make your space something you love to do. ABA is so great because it can be done anywhere. It doesn't need, you know, a specific whatever to function. It happens every day. We're ABA'd as an adult with work and just social norms, going to the grocery store. ABA is everywhere. You just can't feel it or physically touch it. But when you become an analyst, you see it everywhere. Right. And by giving my staff those experiences, it kind of, once again, it cracks that rigid thinking. Because I get a lot of really good staff, but they're burnt out and they like come with PTSD from other companies that I have to scrub off of them, be like, no, you're fine. You're allowed to talk here. You can ask questions. You're good. And they've realized that their job can be fun. They just worked for 4 hours. I have to tell them to come in and eat because they're out there having, I go, you have to feed your kids.
Yeah.
Take a lunch break. So they forget because they're enjoying it so much and they're taking data. And on that note, I would like to share some data that we grabbed directly from that as well. So we took data on an 8-year-old male, 6-year-old female, and a 4-year-old male. The way that we contrast the reductions in behavior was we took a sample of the previous 4 days of therapy and averaged that out for what the average week would look like. And then we compared it to 4 hours worth of data in a brand new environment. The 8-year-old male had a 64% reduction in problem behaviors. The 6-year-old female had an 81% reduction in problem behaviors. The 4-year-old male had a 10% reduction in problem behaviors. And that sounds really good. And you know what? Everyone's like, oh, it's just 10%. 10% is huge for problem behavior reduction. Here's the thing, though. Not only did we do that, because I read about MBI, I was exposed to it, I'm really about it. I told every one of my staff, you increase the man placement for replacement behaviors by 300 to 400%. 3 to 4 times your normal asking load. I go, here's a week's data sheet. I want you to fill it from Monday to Friday in this 4-hour, you know, session. And we saw those maladaptive reductions with a 300 to 400% demand increase. And that's the true power behind MBI, is that things where you're hitting ratio strain in a clinic or a school, that does not occur in the natural setting. Because that artificial stimulus is done. These kids have never been to that beach. It's a novel beach. It's a novel activity. They've never went shark tooth coming before. And we're still seeing the reduction. And when we see a reduction in maladaptive, we see the inverse reduction in replacement at a minimum. And I'm really, as you can tell, excited about this. And I'm really hoping to get a clean study done, so I can present at COFABA and FABA in the near future with that.
That would be incredible.
Again, it started with breaking that rigid thinking with clients, right? Holding a dinosaur bone. Then I broke the rigid thinking with my staff, making them enjoy their job without them knowing it. And now what I want to do is I want to break the rigid thinking in the field that four walls is not the answer. It's getting outdoors. And when we can show enough data behind that, we can influence the insurance companies to start approving natural settings with that. Because 10, 15 years ago, if you had a clinic or a school, that was a massive feather in your cap as, you know, a company owner, because nobody had them back then. Well, that train line of thinking kind of took off, and now everybody has a school, clinic, something like that, because right. that's the perceived, you know, golden cup to show success. To me, I see a deficit in this community of in-home public-private schools and in the community. And this right. is why I would like to present eventually a COFABA and FABA. But I need a few more trials to put a good presentation together, because, you know, at FABA, the presenters, you know, Merrill Winston, brilliant presenter. You know, we just had Dr. Paul Gavani, great OBM, you know, truly respected. We had Jonathan Ferdinand, fantastic feeding protocol. Andrew Hoover is just an all-around superstar. So these are big names that are right. going to bid out for a presentation that little old me at KTABA has to get groundbreaking stuff in that maybe some people will get interested in. And I mean, knowing my luck, I'll get scheduled with Merrill's time slot so that, you
oh,
know,
yeah. then you feel like nobody
of like seven people in here or whatnot. But no, that's the goal, is to yeah. improve the field as a whole, not just the families we service.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be great. I would love to come to your presentation. Although if you are timed the same time as Merrill, it might be a little hard for me.
I was going to say, I might skip my own presentation at that point.
You know, it's funny story, just really quick about, so Merrill, I'm sure he doesn't remember me whatsoever, but he actually, I used to be a PCM trainer for St. John's
okay.
County School District, and he was my instructor, and that was my first time ever. Oh, like, cool. if I was a BCB, meeting him ever in my life, and I'm like, this guy, I was like, I could listen to him yeah. all day, and I had no that's idea like, who he was.
Wow, you know? That's so, fantastic. Yeah. You know, I would... That's a really cool, you know, flex with that, you know, train.
I know, I'm like, Winston. I should just, like, message. I was like, you know, side note, I should, like, message him and be like, hey, what, remember me that one time? No.
I was that one person in that one class this many
yeah,
years
exactly.
ago.
That you've taught, like, 20, like, you know, 200 times or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that was cool before I really knew who he was. But, yeah, he always gives great presentations, but I'm sure, I mean, you're going to, I think that, you know, you'll continue to get, like, this data collected, and you're going to have a great presentation, too. Just ask not to have that same time slot.
And my student analysts are coming up, and they're starting to, because right. I tell them about conferences to try and pique their interest, and little by little, they're going to these conferences, and they're, like, online that's, you know, free. They're like, look at what I learned. I go, let's talk about it. Get excited about research. And they're like, I want to do research. I go, you're in the right company. Because I have this, like, limitless research opportunity, because we could do every aspect of behavior in the natural environment. So it would be really yeah. neat to get a bunch of people that are research-driven in the company.
Yeah. Really no, I think that'd be great. I think that'd be great. And I always thought, like, I would be totally interested to go out on your adventures with you if I was a little closer to Brevard. It's about an hour and a half for me. But maybe okay. I'll visit you sometime in one of your
yeah, for meetings. Sure. How fun would it be to do a podcast out there?
Yeah.
And be able to see everything
absolutely.
Laid out.
Oh, I would 100% be down to do that. So you let me know when.
Absolutely.
So just a fun question before we end is, if you could bring any dinosaur back to life and introduce it to your clients, which would it be and why?
The one that I would want to bring back is the Ankylosaurus, the big armored dinosaur with the big club on the tail, because I think it looks really cool and it's one of my favorite dinosaurs. But for kids, it may not be the best dinosaur. So I would have to go with like a Hadrosaur, which is like a duck-billed dinosaur, like Ducky from Land Before Time. Like a Parasaurolophus would be a species on that, since it probably wouldn't be aggressive, since it's a herbivore and it lived in a herd and it normally would just run away from any danger. Mm-hmm. But it has a cool feature, like a big horn coming off its head, and it's bipedal. It's very dinosaur-looking animal type thing.
Yeah.
I think that would be just a really neat one for people to experience up close.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would be really cool. I like that idea. Well, Andrew, it was an absolute pleasure having you on
yes.
today.
Thank
and
you for having me.
Yeah, of course. And so all of Andrew's contact will be linked in today's podcast notes. So be free to take a look and remember to leave a review. Thanks again, Andrew.
Thank you for having me.